Good morning, everyone, and welcome. It's FPC Radio Live. Happy Friday. That's right. We're closing out the week. Another week down the drain. And it should be a pretty exciting day, especially if you're a hockey fan. Got the NHL trade deadline here today. And, of course, we are in the NFL world anticipating the start of the new league year next week. So, a lot going on this weekend. A lot going on this weekend. I'm pretty excited. And, John, don't forget, move your clocks ahead, spring ahead, right? That's what we're doing this weekend?
I believe so, yeah. So it'll be light out even later at night, a little darker early in the morning, but you feel that spring is on its way.
Yes, and, you know, aren't we supposed to be doing that permanently? Isn't that kind of the discussion that we've had? Wasn't there some law or something that was put into place? I don't stay up with too many current events because, well, I should know the answer to this. So that's why I'm going to you, John.
Well, the House passed it, and now the Senate has to pass it. And since nothing gets done easily in Washington, you know, we might all be dead by the time they get this signed into law. There was actually some rumor out there when Charlie Baker was governor of Massachusetts that he wanted to put us in the Atlantic time zone, which would make us an hour earlier, which would certainly be interesting because then it would stay light out later because then we'd be the back end of the Atlantic time zone. That's why, like, if you ever see Detroit Tiger games in the summer, it's like still light out at 9 o'clock because they're the very back end of the Eastern time zone. So that would have been pretty cool. But we're at the front end of the Atlantic time zone. Well, now that I have everybody confused and given everybody
because you know what? I'm actually like Detroit where I am because we might be, I don't know, geographically, we might not be on the same latitude. See, longitude, long, across, latitude, up and down. See, that's how I remember it. Mm-hmm. But we're not on the same latitude, but we're pretty close. Because I think if you get up into the panhandle, at some point, you cross over into that central time zone. So, which is weird. I don't know. It's like, what do you do? I mean, what if you're right on the line, John? Like, take one step one way, one step the other.
Yeah. Well, I had an uncle, I saw some cousins that were living in Danville, Illinois, and that was the central time zone. And then, but they were right on the border of Indiana, and we had dinner reservations at a restaurant in Indiana, actually ate catfish for the first and last time.
Yeah.
So it got confusing because they're an hour ahead. So you're making like you're in a time machine, like the dinner reservations are at 6, so we're going to leave at 6:45 to get there at 6, which is pretty cool.
That would drive me absolutely nuts, to be honest with you. Because, like, you know, for example, when I go out to the West Coast, which I like to do sometimes, I understand the three-hour difference. And even sometimes, not because I don't understand it, I'm not trying to label myself a moron here. It's sometimes your internal clock's a little disorienting. So, like, you know, there's been plenty of times I've been out in Vegas, and I know that, like, well, football games start at 9 and 1, not 1 and 4, but I'll still be sitting there, and same with hockey. It's harder with, like, if I want to see a hockey game, because obviously football's all day, and it's pretty hard to mistake when football's on when you're at a casino in Las Vegas. But For instance, there's been plenty of times where I'm like, oh, man, I can't wait for the Bruins game. And I'm sitting there and my entire day, I'm planning on watching the Bruins game at 7 or 8 o'clock at night. Meanwhile, it starts at 5. And I'm just like, and then I forget. And then I'm like, wait a minute, why am I so disoriented right now? Like, I should understand this pretty, you know, I should understand this at this point, you know. But, hey, it is what it is. That's the fun in it.
I liked it better because I remember watching NBA playoff games at 4 o'clock in the afternoon when I was in Vegas.
I love waking up at 9 o'clock and getting football. Like, I love that. Mm-hmm. I think that's fantastic. That's what I want to do. By the time football's over, it's like 9 o'clock at night. And I don't feel like I'm you know, forcing myself, you know, towards the end of the Sunday night game just to stay awake and, like, I don't know. I used to, you know, 15 years ago, I'm sitting there laughing at the people complaining about games that start at 8:30. Now I'm like, ugh, the game starts at 8:30. Why not 4? Let's get it over,
exactly.
You know. But
yeah, that's nap time. That's
No, I mean, I'm just an early riser, so that's kind of what it is. So, you know, again, I do like those times. I got to spend a couple football Sundays out there this season, which was nice. Like I said, I like the actually one of them happened to be it wasn't the Germany game. Wasn't the Patriots. The Patriots were playing the Raiders, actually.
Patriots played the Colts in Germany.
Yeah, right. But I was saying I was there on my birthday. So, you know, I spent that weekend there. The Patriots happened to be playing, I believe, the Raiders. Actually, I think it might have been the next week. I think the 22nd of October. But anyways, I was there for one of the overseas games. So technically, I got football at 6 o'clock in the morning or whatever it was, and it was great. Because, again, my internal clock, which this doesn't make sense, John. So obviously, you know, you figure your body's used to a certain amount of time, and you wake up, you know, according to that time, not necessarily the physical time, but it's almost the exact opposite. So, like, technically 6 o'clock in the morning or 5:30 in the morning in Las Vegas is 8:30 in the morning here, but I'm still waking up at 5:30 feeling like it's 5:30. You know what? It's very confusing. Like, right. I feel like my internal clock is even more screwed up because that, like I said, that just doesn't make sense.
Yeah. And if you're waking up at 5:30 Eastern time, it's then 2:30 where you are in Vegas.
Yeah. Right. Right. So, anyways, now that we've gotten that time change talk out of the way, we can get back to business, clearly is talking about the time change because there's not much going on. I'm kidding, obviously. like I mentioned at the top of the show, at the open, you know, a lot of stuff going on, certainly in the NHL. The trade deadline has been rocking and rolling already. We anticipate there's going to be at least a few pretty big moves today, too, before the end of the day, which will... it's always, you know, we talked about this, I think, last week or maybe a couple weeks ago, kind of the trade deadlines in the certain sports and how it's kind of, you know, hockey's always been sort of exciting. They've always had, you know, player movement's always been pretty common in the NHL. Obviously, football has in recent years picked up, which I think we're seeing. You know, it wasn't that long ago, John, that the trade deadline would come and go, and you'd maybe see an exchange of draft picks, but player movement rarely happened. And I feel like it was only in the last, like, say, 15 years that, you know, it just became more normal, because now we expect it in the NFL, which, again, like I said before, it was not so commonplace.
Yeah, I think the NHL trade deadline is now the best trade deadline because it comes later in the season.
Yeah,
it's only, 5 weeks left in the regular season. So teams are really fine-tuning their rosters for the stretch run. Teams are out of it now, so they're going to try to trade players that are going to be unrestricted free agents once the offseason comes. So if they can even get back some draft capital, they're going to do it. Contending teams are looking to upgrade. Basketball's trade deadline is a month earlier, and there's still a lot of time left. And then when you expand the playoffs to 10 teams, and I know 4 of the 10 are technically play-in teams, but they still, to me, are called playoff teams because now it's kind of a one-and-done situation.
Right.
I think the NBA should move the trade deadline to late February so maybe you'd get more action. Baseball, occasionally you'll see a big trade. That used to be huge.
There
was a time growing up. Just look at the Red Sox. They, you know, trading Nomar Garciaparra at the trade deadline in 2004 was monumental. Growing up as a kid, it used to be June 15th.
Absurd. Yeah.
Yeah, it was so early. But, you know, they continually moved it back to now July 31st, and then you can still make trades in August, and there's some sort of technicalities you have to jump through. Football, I wish they moved it back a couple weeks to, you know, maybe week 10 or 11. Because now with 7 teams making the playoffs, you know, if you're 5-5 at that point, you might say, we're still in playoff contention. We're not going to move some pieces. I wish the Patriots had moved some pieces last year. They were clearly out of playoff contention. Maybe you get a third-round pick for Josh Uche or a second-round pick for Kyle Duggar or something. I don't know. Along those lines. I would have done that because they were clearly out of contention by the time the trade deadline.
Yeah, but those are guys that you want. when you're looking at this team and trying to rebuild it. So I think, you know, certainly given what their draft is, I think they're going to have plenty of draft capital as it is. But yeah, Braden, real quick, you know, he says, thank God Vegas wasn't the one that got Jake Guentzel. He actually went to Carolina. But it's funny because I saw, you know, we've seen Vegas swing a couple pretty big moves. They've been kind of one of the more active teams at the NHL trade deadline, defending Stanley Cup champion, since we're talking about Vegas. I saw someone tweet yesterday. I thought this was pretty funny because, you know, they seem to really go hard at the deadline every year. But they said something along the lines of, like, the Vegas front office acts like, you know, we're all just, like, going to cease to exist soon. So what the hell? Why not? You know, when it comes to making trades and moves. And you know what? I thought it was pretty funny because, in a way, it's like, yeah, you know, like, look at what they've done at the trade deadline the last couple of years. Certainly last year helped them. And now, you know, you bring in a couple studs, I guess you can call it, at the deadline. And, you know, like I said, you're looking at a team that could potentially go back-to-back. We just had a back-to-back champion in the NFL, so why not the NHL, John? We haven't had that since, was it Pittsburgh? Or am I just complete?
Pittsburgh in 08 and 09, right?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Yeah. No, that's right.
No, because
12 and 14, but the Blackhawks in 13. And then Pittsburgh later with Crosby won it in 16 and 17, I believe.
Oh, yeah, right. Okay, that's right, what I was – right, okay. Back-to-back. Yeah, that's – so I was right. I was just thinking of the wrong
yep.
iteration of the Penguins, but yeah, still had Crosby but
yeah. In 16 and 17, yep. Yeah. Crosby and Malkin and that great team.
Yeah, but I mean, obviously in hockey it's a – you know, we've seen it. That's why, like, you know, when we talk about dynasties and people bring up different sports, I always say, like, look, I'm not going to sit there and try to cross sport comparison dynasties because they all have different standards for different reasons, because they have, you know, there's different levels of success in every sport. And it's like, you know, in hockey, we've seen someone win four straight Stanley Cups, you know, like, mm-hmm. So that's, I mean, we've never seen a three straight champion in a three-peat in the NFL, let alone a four-peat. So, and even in basketball, it's rare. How many teams have four-peated outside of, like, maybe some of the early, like, the Celtics and
the
Minneapolis Lakers.
That's it. Yeah, I mean, Jordan had two three-peats, but then in between, he was out of the sport. The Lakers had a three-peat with Shaq and Kobe. Even Golden State wasn't able to three-peat because, you know, LeBron and Kyrie Irving came back from three games to one down. Difficult to do it. There was a time, Ian, from like the late 60s until the nearly late 80s, nearly a 20-year period, where you wouldn't get a repeat champ in the NBA. The Celtics won back-to-back titles in 68 and 69 in the NBA. It didn't happen again till the 88 Lakers. Like, they were one-time champs. And then they'd lose the next year and come back and win it the next year. Like, well, the Celtics would do that, or the Lakers would do that.
And that's why I, you know, we had this talk shortly after the Super Bowl and leading into the Super Bowl, and, you know, certainly we're going to continue to have it. But, like, you know, what's you know, the idea of a dynasty? Certainly in the NFL, it seems to be a three championships wins, not appearances, but wins in a relatively short period of time, like 4, 5, 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not necessarily required, but I think this discussion is kind of supporting why I feel like it maybe not should be, but there's a strong case that it could. But going back to back is important, and, you know, I say that in any situation. If you want to talk about a team being a dynasty, I almost feel like you have to have that element to it, because it you know, you've successfully gone and defended your title, which is not something that's easy to do in any sport. I mean, we do talk about, yeah, some teams have gone on and won 3 and 4 in other sports, but even that's rare. It's not like it happens all the time. So, again, to win back-to-back in any capacity is impressive, because it's hard to do that, John. It's hard to win. Now, you know, I know the naysayers out there will immediately point to say, well, what happened about the Patriots' second run? Well, yes, they didn't win back-to-back, but again, we can have this discussion all day, every day, about what is there. I've seen some people split that dynasty up into two different ones, and I feel like the way, now looking back at it in totality, I think we can confidently say it was just that it's one big dynasty because of what they accomplished. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily just in the championship years, but they kind of bridged those two runs, championship runs, with some of the best stretch of regular season play you're ever going to see from a team. So it's a unique situation that's not necessarily, and obviously the common denominator is Brady Belichick. If it was a different head coach, different quarterback, or both, then we're talking it's different. Okay, then we can split it up. But those are those two key pieces. I think is what helps solidify that. So when people say, oh well, you know, those 2014, the 2018 Patriots didn't win back-to-back. Well, they went to three straight, but they're a dynasty because they had been one for a decade and a half. And I think even without the championship, I think it helps that you were 90 seconds away from being 19-0, you know? Had they not gone to a couple Super Bowls and had they had a period of time where they just, you know, maybe they don't win the division, then I think you can sit there and say definitively that maybe they're too separate. Does that make sense? Or am I just kind of trying to convince myself here?
The way I look at it is from 2005 to 2013, they didn't win any Super Bowls, but they had the best record in the NFL during that period of time. They still went to the conference championship game.
And I think by a significant margin, too.
They were always there. I mean, it wasn't like they were going 4-12 and out of the picture. I mean, they were always in contention. Made the playoffs every year except 08 without Brady. So, yeah, I mean, that kind of bridged two dynasties. I would say a dynasty, I mean, and again, you have to look at the context of it as well. Like, the 49ers won 5 Super Bowls in 14 years. I consider that a dynasty because, you know, they did win it with two different quarterbacks and two different head coaches. And it's just that the conference was so damn strong. I mean, just to get to the Super Bowl, felt like you won the championship, and in the 49ers case, they were 5-0 in Super Bowls. But I look at the Patriots winning 3 out of 5 as a dynasty, yes, because the way I look at it is, let's say it's a 5-year period, you've won more than you've lost.
Right.
You've 3 championships in 5 years, means you won 60% of the championships over a 5-year period. I guess that's maybe my simple way of looking at a dynasty, and that qualifies.
Well, and look, I'm not arguing, and like I said before, it's I definitely wouldn't consider it a requirement, but it feels like it's such a strong factor in the whole discussion, and I think there's obviously, you know, and you look back and say, well, you know, if the Patriots won against the Eagles, you know, well, now we're talking about 3 Super Bowls in a row. I mean, maybe even if it is 2 in a row, it looks a little bit more impressive or what have you. I'm not quite sure, but you know, like I said, just the idea of going back to back is I think it's underrated. And like I said, I mean, look, I think winning is important, you know, so sue me, right? You know, I think winning's important in sports. That's what I value the most. So teams that win the most, players that win the most, those are the players that I like, you know what I mean? Those are the ones that I think are great and certainly ones that are worthy of being anointed, whatever. So when you can win at a level or at a rate that not anyone else is necessarily doing or not doing frequently, that to me is impressive. And that's what, like I said, that's what separates great runs from dynastic runs. And I think it seems like a fine line, but that fine line, that difficulty to win that second Super Bowl in a row or to, you know what I mean? It's probably the hardest stretch leading up to that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, winning back-to-back is so difficult. Some things have to break your way. You have to stay healthy. Especially in football, because I think you can kind of put football to the side because it's one and done.
Yeah.
You know, like in basketball, you get a 7-game series. More times than not, the better team wins. So, you know, we've seen this throughout history. Obviously, the Celtics in the 60s. The Lakers in the 80s, the Jordan Bulls, et cetera, were all the best teams, and they just proved it pretty much every spring. With football, look, the Kansas City Chiefs weren't the best team of football during the regular season, but they were in the postseason.
Right.
And that's what matters, but it's one and done. You have a bad day. The quarterback has a bad day. Your defense is leaky, whatever. You're done. So that makes it even more difficult.
And more impressive when you do win.
Very impressive. Yeah, that's why, you know, when you talked about Brady's accomplishments and now Mahomes' accomplishments, they're incredible because on any given Sunday, not to sound cliche-ish, but, you know, it can happen. Growing up, there were hockey dynasties. Like the Canadians won 4 straight Stanley Cup, ruined my childhood as a Bruins fan. Then you had the Islanders win 4 straight, and then Edmonton won 4 out of 5 years. It was just like these teams were just so much better than everyone else that they just kept rolling through championships. We haven't seen that since. You know, we've seen some back-to-back champs, but not as often as that. So,
yeah, and we've seen some like nice runs. Like Chicago had a really nice run in the 2010s, and I don't know if I'd consider it necessarily a dynasty. To me, it was a very impressive run, you know? Certainly based on...
3 out of 6 years, right?
We're talking about hockey standard, and you've already rattled off 3 teams that won either four in a row or 4 out of 5, so I think the standard is a little bit higher. And then, you know, go back to the Canadians and you know... back in the day, and if you want to talk about even in a shortened league, so it's a fun discussion, no doubt about it. And I'm glad Braden brought this up because you know the dynasty, you know the documentary that's been going around has been quite the ire of Patriots fans or some Patriots fans. I don't know if it's the majority. I think it's closer to the majority than the minority, for sure. I don't have any official numbers. I wasn't out polling people. But the common takeaway from this is it's not so much a celebration of the actual run for the Patriots. It's more of a Robert Kraft Hall of Fame propaganda piece gone wrong, because I think I can't remember if we talked about this on or off the air yesterday, but you're going to be hard pressed to find someone else who has, I don't want to say torpedoed his reputation, but damaged it among the fan base that really loved the guy. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, they won a lot. It was Robert Kraft, you know, Mr. Kraft, Bill Belichick, Tom Brady. Well, we're what, 6-7 episodes in, and the tide has turned quite a bit, I think, for a lot of fans in Patriot Nation.
Do we know of any other owner in any other sport who's been so transparent in their want to be in the Hall of Fame? Like in baseball, it was Burt Blyleven. Remember Burt Blyleven every year would campaign for him getting into the Hall of Fame and finally into the Hall of Fame?
I'll say this, maybe publicly, but this is not abnormal behavior for guys like Robert Kraft and others who, I mean, the Hall of Fame has become a campaign for the most part. Like, you know, they're sure. Surefire well, people that those, can, yeah.
And they have such massive egos.
Right, right.
We talk, I've said this a million times, Brady, Belichick, Kraft. The guy with the biggest ego of those three is Kraft. The guy with the most money is Robert Kraft. So easily the biggest ego. And I think you made the case Brady has the smallest ego of the three. And he has a massive ego, as he should. So, I mean, like, I don't remember Eddie DeBartolo, who waited a long time to get into the Hall of Fame and was as successful, if not more successful, as owner of the 49ers, campaigning as much, and finally he got
I will say
Jerry Jones, maybe. Was Jerry Jones campaigning for this? But he got in, what, about a half a dozen years ago?
Yeah, but I will say this in sort of defense of Kraft. I mean, think of his age. I mean, if...
True, he's 82, yeah.
You know what I mean? If like, at a certain point, like, even if I was humble and whatever, and look, I think he deserves to get in. I'm not... You know, I think eventually he'll get in. There's others that do deserve as well. So, I mean, we're not saying that, like, he is bona fide number one should be in guy right now. But I do think, you know, even as much as we sit here and kind of learn a little bit more about some of his, just how he was, I guess, during this whole run. I mean, yeah, you can sit there and say, like, maybe his case isn't as rock solid, or at least as unimpeachable as you thought it was. But at the same time, the guy deserves to be in. He's been at the forefront of 9 Super Bowl appearances. Yes, 8. Sorry.
Ten Super Bowl appearances.
What am I talking? Jesus. Yeah, I'm
I made a mistake 2 weeks ago. You corrected me.
I know.
You made the same mistake. I corrected you. Like our brains are connected at some point. We have good days and bad days.
You know,
I did the same thing. I said 9 Super Bowls. You said, no, wait, 10, because he was owner.
Yeah, and then here I did the same exact thing. You know, it's funny. Yeah. That's why we're a good team, John. One of us is stupid one day, the other's stupid the next. So.
Yep.
It's we're ying
better
and
the, duo than Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown.
Yeah, there you go. Anyways, but anyway, but so, you know, the guy's been at, you know, owned the team for, 31 years now, been to one third of the Super Bowls that he's been an owner, 6 championships, you know, the guy's going to be in the Hall of Fame. You know, he was an integral part of some of the labor, agreements that were made. So the guy deserves to be in the Hall of Fame, but I'm not going to necessarily knock him for campaigning because again, if I were his age, I'd want to be alive to appreciate it, at least for a little, you know what I mean? Like, so I understand the urgency in that regard from him. Oh, well, looks like I lost John there for a minute. So I'm just going to have to ramble on here for a minute, but, no, anyways, and so yeah, Braden, you bring up a great point. The general consensus is that most people are disappointed that it just wasn't a recollection of the championship run or whatever. John, I think I lost you. I think my phone was tapped. I heard some beeping on the other side, so maybe Robert and Jonathan were listening in.
Yes. They were, and they're not happy with our take.
No,
this morning.
Clearly not.
Yeah, no, I think he belongs in the Hall of Fame because, you know, the winning part of it is
well, again, yeah.
In the Hall of Fame, I would guess. I mean, that's a big part of it. And then also his role in the 2011 lockout, where he kind of got everybody together. Whether he saved the season or not, I don't know. The season
he'll tell you he probably did, but, you know.
Right. I mean, again, massive ego. Yeah, he saved football. But, yeah, he, of course, I think he belongs in there. And, you know, again, you make a great point, and he's 82 years old. Like, how much longer do you wait to put someone in? Who's
right.
I always remember in baseball, Ron Santo was someone who I always thought deserved to be in the Hall of Fame. And, you know, he had type 1 diabetes from a young age and, you know, leg amputated. He was in ill health. He passed away, and the Hall of Fame inducted him, like, a year later.
Right.
And they had done this a little earlier. So this guy who, by all accounts, was the classiest athlete ever. Like, Ron Santo's always at the top of those lists of, like, the greatest, the nicest man ever to play professional sports. Like, could have put him in, and he was a Hall of Famer 2 years before he died. And now he's a Hall of Famer a year after he died. So it was kind of sad in that sense. But, I think eventually he'll get in. And again, you know this stuff a lot more than I do with the Eye Test podcast. But it's not necessary that an owner goes in every year. I mean, we know there's 5 contemporary players and then, you know, some of the legacy players and then contributors. So the owners, they basically go in as contributors, correct?
Right. And as we saw this year, the committee that does elect these contributors nominated Buddy Parker, but in the general vote, and this is something that doesn't happen often, so it was kind of a shock and kind of a point of tension among some of the voters, but the general group didn't confirm his nomination, which is odd. And there's certain reasons for that and why there was some issue, but that's how it works. So, you know, you're going to have a smaller group, elect these contributors. It's a much smaller pool and rightfully so, because as much as there is a backlog, it's not like the player backlog. How many coaches truly deserve to be in the Hall of Fame? How many owners? You know what I mean? That's why I think, you know, eventually Robert Kraft is going to get in because, you know, his resume is hard to argue against. Certainly in the aspect of, well, what do you want to do when you own a franchise? Well, you want to win. You want to be successful. You want to make money and turn what was once a... You know, I think the term laughing stock has been very overused. Yes, 1992 was an awful, awful year for Patriots fans. But you look over the course of their history, and they've been a pretty good franchise. They've had some nice runs, division titles, But clearly not to the extent that the last 20 plus years were, and not too many teams have. So, you know, you take that into account, what he was around for that, where the franchise is now versus where it was when Brady first took over. I remember, hey, Foxborough Stadium, and you know what was out behind there between early October to the end of October? Spooky World. Remember that, John? Spooky That's World.
Right, yeah.
They'd set up in the back parking lot because it was just a bunch of trees and a parking lot. So now It's, you know, well, still a bunch of trees and a parking lot. But in between all that, it's a massive complex with shopping and you know, centered around Gillette Stadium. So anyways, real quick, though, before we go, I did want to bring this up because your guy, Aaron Rodgers, was talking recently. And he says, John, you would like to play 2 to 4 more years. Now, I'm going to sit here and say now, and look, I could be proven wrong, and you can, you know, point it out to me if I am, but I put that at 0% chance of happening. Zero. Like, I just don't, and it's not so much even the injury here. Like, I mean, that's a factor. I think that's made me more confident that I'm going to be right in this situation. But, look, I think the Jets are going to break him. Like, the organization, the history of failure, like, they're going to be better next year. But you know what, John? At the end of the day, it's going to be just the same old Jets. And I don't think he can endure 2 to 4 more years of it. Let's be honest.
So you're thinking that he may just tap out mentally more so than
I think that's going to be a factor, but I do think physically he is going to be much more limited, more so now because of the injury. I said yesterday, I thought, you know, him and Brady had a down year in 2022. So we talked about it last year. There were concerns going into this season. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, you know, let's see if that was just, you know, it could have just been a down year statistically. It happens. We've seen it. But at the same time, it's like, well, let's see what happens. Well, what happened was 4 plays in, he blew out his Achilles. So how is that going to give me more confidence that he's somehow going to overcome that? I don't. Actually, I have less confidence. So there's questions about his ability coming into the season pre-Achilles tear, and now even more so post-Achilles tear. So I think a combination of, like, look, I mean, if Tom Brady went to Tampa Bay and it was an utter failure and they went 4-12, do you think he plays 3 more years?
Well, it depends on how he played, but obviously if he played pretty well, they weren't going to go 4-12. Yeah, I mean, at some point the play dips. The player maybe doesn't have the fire that he had before. Like, I always felt that Brady was going to retire once the fire went out, which I think kind of happened in 2022. It had some things going on off the field as well as on the field. And at that point, he was almost like, I've given you everything I have. I'm ready to move on.
Right.
Probably still part of him that wants to still play, but he realizes that it's time to move on. It's going to broadcasting, build his businesses, or take a month off and sail the Mediterranean if you want.
Well,
he's got that type of ability.
Well, I think that's maybe selfish. He's not the sailor. Okay. What about my feelings, John?
I know. Well,
what about my feelings?
Go to the Mediterranean and chase him down.
Who says I'm not? By the way, we're going to take a week off from the show. I'm not going to tell you why, but I'll be gone.
But with Rodgers, it could also be a thing where he taps out mentally and says, I'm just not what I used to be, and I don't want to embarrass myself. I mean, the 2 years he could possibly play. Let's see what he is this year. So that's on the low end, obviously.
Yeah.
I can't see him playing another 4 years, maybe 2 years. Does a year off, does it help him in terms of, you know, he wasn't hit at all last year, the body rejuvenates, maybe the Achilles, well, he's saying the Achilles are stronger than ever because, you know, that's the way he thinks and speaks. But, you know, we'll have to see what it's like. The thing with Rodgers and the Jets, it's like it wouldn't take much for him to be the best quarterback in that franchise since, I don't know, Joe Namath. Like, a solid Aaron Rodgers season is better than anything else they've seen in the last 50 years.
Right, right.
So, you know, it's not like he's replacing Brett Favre nearly 20 years ago. This is a different animal.
And like, you know, think, And Braden, again, brings up another good point, although you might want to check the spelling of mentally. I think you added an extra A there. it's the editor in me. I gotta point that out. I do it all the time, so don't worry about it. I make, you know, just look at some of my tweets. It's frustrating when I go back like 2 hours later. I'm like, ah, I should have just checked because I can edit it in the first like 30 minutes or whatever. But he does. He brings up a great point. It's like the dynamic of Robert Saleh. Is he the coach that's going to bring this out of Aaron Rodgers? Like, they have no time. There's no margin for error, is what I'm trying to get at with this Jets and Rodgers marriage. Because, like I said, if it's an utter failure this year, wouldn't the Jets not bring him? Like, they're only committed for 2 years, right? That's what the contract was.
Right, the conversation's been done because the second round pick is going to Green Bay this year.
Right, right. So what if we're eight weeks into the season and they're 2-6 and he's not played well?
And Zach Wilson's gone, right?
Well,
he's going to be gone.
It may not necessarily be strictly his play. I mean, think about this Jets team around him. I mean, they still need to fix that offensive line.
They sure do.
And you go into next season with a subpar offensive line, forget about it. This team isn't going to win games. I told you earlier this season, I mean, the injury might have been a blessing in disguise, because based on what we saw from the Jets this year, yeah, they would have probably been a little bit better with Aaron Rodgers, but there's dysfunction in that organization that's like generational dysfunction. You come to the Jets and you have this like angst about you. It doesn't matter if you haven't been involved with the franchise ever before. There's just this aura, and it's not a great one, John. It's really not. So for whatever reason, this franchise has not been able to get away from that. And you know, I'm thinking, look, if it sours quickly, there's not going to be, you know, too much eagerness, I'm sure, from the Jets franchise to bring Aaron Rodgers back for another year, because, I mean, we saw him move on from Brett Favre. Brett Favre had a lot to do with that because he kind of forced his way out. But you know what I mean? Like, they saw that not go well, so I don't think they're going to think twice about not extending this experience, especially for a guy that would be 41 next year after this season.
Yeah, and obviously, at some point, you're going to have to pay Garrett Cole and Sauce Gardner. You know, Breece Hall. I mean, these are all players that are now going into the third year, so they're not far away from getting big contracts. They've already proven they can all play, especially if Garrett Cole has a competent quarterback. I mean, he can put up some real serious numbers. So, you know, now becomes a money issue. A lot of cap keeps going up, and Rodgers makes a big part of what their cap represents. So, yeah, I mean, if they're 7-10 again with Aaron Rodgers, then at that point, like, what's the point?
Right.
Especially if he's playing mediocre quarterback and you're paying him all this money and he's a handful to deal with in the locker room and on the field. At some point, maybe it's time to move on. I mean, they keep drafting quarterbacks high. I mean, in my lifetime, they've drafted quarterbacks high in the first round. Like, it feels like every other year. I mean, Mark Sanchez was, I think, the fifth pick in the draft back in 2009. And then you had Sam Darnold was third in 2008. Zach Wilson was.
Chad Pennington back in the day.
Second.
I think he
Pennington
was
a first round pick. Yeah. He was late 20s, maybe.
Yeah.
I think maybe around 20. He was in the draft with Brady. You also had Ken O'Brien was actually drafted. But here's an organization that drafted Ken O'Brien before Dan Marino.
That's what I'm saying, John. It's generational dysfunction. This goes back, I mean, like, it's rooted in the franchise.
Well, that 83 draft, Marino was the sixth quarterback taken. There were rumors of other things that caused him to drop in the draft. It certainly wasn't talent, because if it was talent, he would have been second behind John Elway. But, like, Todd Blackledge, Kansas City took Todd Blackledge, of all people.
Yeah.
The Patriots took Tony Eason. The Jets took Ken O'Brien. O'Brien was good for a few years, but he certainly wasn't Dan Marino. They took Richard Todd in 1976. He was okay, went to the playoffs a couple times. But they really have never had a high-end quarterback since Joe Namath.
Yeah.
And Namath, even his last 3 or 4 years, was a shell of himself after all those injuries. So that's why the hope was there that, okay, you're getting a four-time MVP. You're getting a guy who's a, you know, top 10 quarterback in the history of the sport. Let's see what he's got left. And we don't know.
Right.
You know, it's a big X factor. And maybe they benefit, and this happened with Brady in 08. If you're going to have a season-ending injury, have it in week one so that you can get back quicker, I guess.
Right.
I mean, if it happens in week 18, the recovery time is that much shorter. Only Adrian Peterson got hurt in December, came back the next year better than ever because he was a physical freak. But, yeah, so maybe that's – if there's any benefit of it happening in week one is that the ramp up to get back healthy is longer than if he got hurt late in the season. But that's going to be one of the things to watch because I think Buffalo is on the downslide a little bit. You know, they, like you said yesterday.
A little bit. They're having like almost –
broke up their defense.
That defense is going to be a shell of itself, John.
Right. And we both agree Miami, yeah, they can beat the hell out of bad teams. They can't beat good ones. The Patriots are in a rebuild. So, yeah, the opportunity is there for the Jets if they can get their offense to play at a high level or at least a competent level that maybe they steal the division.
And
it'll be one of those years where everybody's bunched together.
Well, and look, I mean, and this is the crazy thing about the NFL, John, is that this year we could be talking about the Patriots and the Jets at the top of the division because, the Jets are getting back a quarterback. And the Patriots are just a mystery at this point. I mean, there's so many things that could happen with that franchise. They could be the best team in the division. They could be the worst team in the division. They could be just mediocre. I mean, there's at this point, there's no way to project what they're going to be. We haven't seen the draft. Free agency hasn't happened. We don't know who's even throwing the football. So in reality, John, you're looking – Buffalo is not swinging back up. Like, they're at the point where they just need to stay afloat. You know what I mean? If we're talking about like, you know, maybe a sinking ship there, like I said, there's too much. They've taken in too much water. They're not getting that water out. Their best hope right now is to just make sure that they're staying above water for as long as they possibly can. And like I said, I don't think it's going to be that much longer because we're seeing the repercussions of having so much cap money. You know, we talked about it when it happened. It's like, yes, you know, you go out, that was a bad contract that they gave to Von Miller, but if it paid off in that first year, you're going to be happy as a Buffalo Bills fan, and you're going to live with the repercussions. Well, guess what? It didn't pay off, and he very quickly, like, 5 year, or what was it, 6 year contract, I figured the last 4 years would be pretty rough. I didn't think he would immediately fall off in year two. Like, zero sacks, John. Zero. Zero.
That's incredible.
It's crazy.
As many as we did.
Yeah.
He had as many sacks as Von Miller. Yeah, I mean, he got hurt the first time around, and maybe if he's healthy in 2022, they go ahead and win the Super Bowl because they were playing really good football down the stretch. Then DeMar Hamlin happened, and I think that kind of rocked the franchise. But, yeah, I mean, they've got to figure this stuff out. They do have the quarterback, so that's a good start. Like that's going to make you at least in play.
Yeah, but now Miami did too.
Some other things around them. Well, this guy's better though.
I'm talking about.
Oh, you're talking about Marino.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, of course. And look, Tua, of course, he's better than Tua.
and Mahomes could be like no one. Mahomes could be a combination of Elway and Kelly, who went to like 9 Super Bowls in a 15-year period. The difference is Mahomes has already won 3.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, you still have that guy that's now kind of blocking all the other quarterbacks from getting to the Super Bowl. And the same way Brady blocked a lot of quarterbacks from getting to the Super Bowl for a period of time, although you still had Manning go to 4 and Roethlisberger go to 3. That's why that conference was so strong from really 01 to Brady left town. I mean, it was just one of those guys was going to the Super Bowl pretty much each and every year.
And then, of course, Joe Flacco.
And then Joe Flacco. And Rich Gannon somewhere in there.
Yeah, you know.
And here comes Joe Flacco.
Rich Gannon and Joe Flacco. That's funny.
Yeah, but pretty much.
Anyways, that's going to do it for us today. We'll be back, obviously, on Monday. And like I said, we're going to be really starting to get ready for that start of free agency. And we'll have some more hockey to talk because, you know, by then the trade deadline will be over and we'll know what will be happening. So thank you, everyone, for tuning in. We appreciate it. Give us a follow on Twitter at FPC Radio Live. And, of course, head over to FullPressCoverage.com and FullPressHockey.com to check out all the latest from everyone over there. So thank you, everyone, and we'll talk to you on Monday.